back, WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are Positively at State Fair, wrapping things up for a 4th of July holiday. We spent a lot of holidays here. I spent Christmas here, Memorial Day. We were here last year on the Crab Cake Tour. I am halfway through
one
Crab Cake. I'm all about it. I've been working the tartar sauce. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We're letting ourselves play, giving away some scratch-offs here, some show-me $10,000 scratch-offs, as well as our friends at Goodwill. And I'm wearing the hat here for Window Nation. You buy two, you get two windows free all summer long. I took advantage of that. You can too. And I've even I got a bucket hat from our friends at Window Nation that Chloe usually wears. This is Chloe's hat. This is the Chloe bucket hat. So she looks cute now. It's all good. Big appreciation to Chloe, who is our intern. This is the recon. We rarely have done the recon sitting next to each other.
I don't know that we
have notes that I'm not going to follow.
I don't know that we ever have.
I don't think we have. So, all right. So, what's on your mind today,
well,
Coach?
Let's start with, and we chatted a little bit earlier with Ron Cassie, who had been in Ireland while you were in Amsterdam. But give us. I always like the travelogue. Give me a sort of a glimpse of your trip to Amsterdam and what was memorable about this trip? Because I love Amsterdam. You went to Anne Frank.
Right.
right.
You've been to Amsterdam, so I'm not talking out of school, right?
Right. I love it. I love Amsterdam.
What do you love about it?
I loved it sounds hokey. I did love the flowers in Amsterdam. I thought they were beautiful. I liked, and people talk about how crazy it is, I loved the energy. And I thought people were exaggerating when they told me, be careful when you cross the street because there are thousands of bikers.
You'll get killed.
Who will be zooming by.
You'll get killed on a bike.
And they expect they have the right of way. So I like the energy of the bikes. I loved the feel of the city. I thought, you know, with, what is it, the river or whatever that runs down through the city. It's just a very pretty city. And then I don't think I've ever visited anything, Nestor, that was much more emotional than the Anne Frank House. Perhaps my visit to Normandy, seeing the beach at D-Day and trying to imagine that and seeing all the graves at Normandy. But that Anne Frank experience is pretty remarkable, is it not?
I've been to Amsterdam 4 times now, and the first couple times I didn't do it, right? So the third time I went, Jen and I talked about it, but it was during World Cup, and you almost couldn't get in. I mean, it's a small row house. It's like right. The Babe Ruth birthplace, you know, in that sort of vein. And, I mean, I'll be honest, and I almost tracked down Sue Monday because I think I didn't read the book, right? I skated on it. Whenever it happened in
English.
You got
English, the Cliff Notes or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, I mean, I'm being really honest. I skated on it. I probably got the Cliff Notes or whatever. I knew the story and the basic outline of a young Jewish girl. I even knew she was from Germany and Niels didn't. I didn't know she was from Frankfurt, but so we signed up to do it, and on that particular morning, my back was screwy over there. Like, I just had a lot of problems getting loosened up, but walking was good for me, and I didn't think much about it. We're going to go to Anne Frank. It's probably going to be emotional. It's probably going to be interesting. It's probably going to be whatever, and I just sort of, I had to go to the bathroom really bad when I went in, so I went to the bathroom, and my wife and Niels and Franzi went ahead of me, so I did it all alone. I said, you guys go ahead. I got to go to the bathroom. You just go. I didn't see them to the gift shop at the end. So I did it alone. I think that mattered. Nobody talked to me.
Right.
Nobody, you know, interjected anything. I thought it was the most powerful thing that I was unprepared for.
Yes.
I was mentally, look, you're in Amsterdam. There's this over there and that over there. And there's a canal and we're walking and there's beer and there's Mick Jagger. And oh, we're going to the Anne Frank House. Sounds nice. Let's go. And then you walk in, and it's
it's sobering. It almost takes your breath away. And to be looking at her handwriting and her notes, and then looking out the window, and for me,
her father's growth chart on the wall.
Oh my goodness! And when you walk behind the bookcase to make your way up the steps,
the hidden bookcase,
the hidden bookcase. I mean, it was just. And knowing that you couldn't talk, you couldn't make any noise.
It's all been preserved in the original, you know, the original wash bay. Just, it's, you want to cry from the minute you get
That's
to the second floor.
That's a great description.
And you want to bring yourself to it, but you're paying attention and you're into it. And then you're in the movie. You're in the movie when you're there.
Oh,
and there's not a lot of museums that are like that.
There is no doubt. And it's funny, you mentioned you wanted to cry, and you've had a lot of reasons to cry the past couple of weeks. The Ravens had really an unprecedented 24 hours when they lose a young 26-year-old man, appears to be, unfortunately, a drug overdose. We don't know yet. But our
that does not reflect well upon the organization right now. You know what I mean? Just like the kind of people they're trying to bring in and what's going on.
What do you mean by that? I don't know that I buy that. That a young 26-year-old succumbs to a drug overdose. I don't know that that's anything to do with the organization.
In the league, let me finish my thought. Yeah. In the league, we look at a kid doing 190 miles an hour out in Las Vegas and killing people and say, well, that's not happening here. You know what I mean? The Ravens, after Ray Rice, had made a concerted effort to make sure that scandal and awful things, bad decisions being made by their people, don't happen. It's impossible in any organization. Right. It really is. It's just, you know, this kind of hits home that you never know.
Oh, no.
You never know.
I have a little bit of a different take on that, and that is, I guess, maybe, Nestor, because over the years I've attended far too many funerals of young men and women who have succumbed to drug overdoses, that I think what I'm always struck by is that it doesn't discriminate by income.
How does this happen?
Addiction is just an awful thing,
I mean, but do they know he's addicted? Is he in a program? Are they trying to get him help? You know, they broke up on Friday and he's dead on Wednesday morning. It's an incredible tragedy, but it's also something that, as an organization, they need to do a little soul searching to figure out how that happened. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
If it happened in my organization, I'd have to figure out, did this person have a problem? Yeah. What was going on? Could we have done more? What's going on over there? That was my first thought.
I think you have to make resources available, but my guess is they do that.
Jamil McClain sat on the Crab Cake Show with Crab Cake Tour with me. Jamil's the guy that's there. They all have a number. They all have a safe number. They all have an agent. They all have teammates who say, I'm your brother, call me.
It comes down.
And I'm getting a lot of that with Goose right now,
It comes down to the fact that addiction is an awful, awful thing. It's hard to... It's hard to deal with, and unfortunately, again, when
I
this
don't know that he was an addict. I mean, he may have been a bender.
Mean.
I can't say it's an addiction.
Right.
I'm saying their kid wound up OD'd in the wrong side of the tracks in a neighborhood. Is it a one-time thing? Len Bias's people all claim he had never had cocaine before that. Well, in the last 35 years, a lot of new information's come out about whether Len Bias was a one-time bender or whether he was a frequent user or whatever. But either way, this is something that, from the time this kid goes to college with agents, the league counsels these, you know, all of the things that they do that they weren't doing in the days of John Matuszak, right?
Or Big Daddy
Lipscomb in an alley down here, you know, off the block, right? I mean, this has been going on forever. There is no end to it, and I guess Eric and John realize they're susceptible like everybody else.
No, it's sad. And then on the heels of that, and I've been following closely your social media post, as has everyone else, we've been grieving with Goose's family and those of you who knew him well. And I'm going to share with you an observation that you had a unique relationship, it appears to me, with Goose that you have not had with but a handful of players along the way. You appear to me to have had a really special relationship with Goose that doesn't come along all that often.
Well, Goose was the first guy to sign up to come in, right? And I had not listened to that piece from 1997. We did that piece in May of 1997. And I guess Goose's death put me on a little bit of soul searching, because, I mean, I call Goose and get him on the show, but Goose and I don't hang out. Politically, completely disaligned. Mm-hmm. Completely disaligned politically, to the point where I wouldn't have discussed it with him. And I did.
Right.
The last time we had dinner, I had dinner with him, Kim Herring, Jack Del Rio, Lionel Dalton, Mike Flynn. I think Spencer came by. Wally Richardson, believe it or not, was there. He wasn't on the Super Bowl team, but he was there that night with Kim because they're close from Penn State. So I had a dinner at Roost Chris, and Goose was there. I mean, Goose wanted to be a part of it. Goose sat in. We had a steak. We laughed a lot, as I remember it. But Goose wasn't a guy that just checked in as a friend, like, at this point in our lives. But at that point in our lives, in 97, I was the radio show of record. He came to town. He wanted to be on the radio. He had a radio show in Indianapolis. Goose was a businessman. Goose came. I went to meetings with Goose when he first got here. Hey, man, we got to get some sponsors, man. We got, you know what I really want? I want one of those Caterpillars, man. You know, you got a Caterpillar dealer? Come on, you got to have a Caterpillar dealer. Or whatever it was. He wanted some lawnmower. I know Caterpillar isn't even the brand. He wanted something else. And we went out and had some meetings. He eventually didn't do business with me. He did business with CBM. He took Mangione's money, did a show on, like, Thursday night at the barn. I did mine Monday night, and he did his show Thursday. But he would come over on Monday and get crabs sometimes. And this would speak to Goose. This is a story I haven't told. I had to think this through. I got pictures of Goose sitting on the other end of me and other guests. So Stephon Moore, Goose. Jim Harbaugh, Goose. Scott Mitchell, Goose. And I thought, Scott Mitchell came out after the first start against the Rams, and it was in 99, so it was Billick's first game, okay? And I found the tape of this, and I had to remember this. We lost that game, remember? Scott Mitchell was kind of a disaster,
the water buffalo.
Right? It was the water buffalo game. DeMarco Farr, water buffalo.
The water buffalo.
So he was my guest the next night, and Goose just magically appeared that night to get crabs. And I remember Goose saying to me, hey, man, he's our new quarterback. He lost. I'm not going to let him come out here and sit alone on the radio.
Oh, yeah, that says something. That speaks volumes. That says something
so
about character.
24, 23 years later, that's a good story about who Goose was, right? Goose is like, I'm not going to let my quarterback sit over there and get killed by you. You know, after we lose, I'm going to come over and we're going to pump him up. He's my quarterback.
Yeah. There you go. Well, that's a good thing. Well, you know, that may speak to Nestor what appeared to be to me, and none of us like to lose folks that we care about, but it seems to me that the Raven fraternity really took Goose's loss hard.
Oh, unbelievably.
Right?
Well, his best friend on the team and one of his best friends in life to this day is Rob Burnett. So Rob was my first text. You know, when Goose died, how are you? And I'm sick. He said, I'm just sick. And I've had five people that have talked. I haven't talked to Rob yet, but I will. And Rob and I are closer than that. Rob and I, once in a while, get a late night phone call, and Rob and I catch up, you know. Kim Herring and I caught up today. Mike Flynn and I are real life friends.
Right.
We've kept a bond and a relationship. So I have, you know, Brian and I, Marvin and I mean, I have friends. I wouldn't say that Goose was in that fraternity, but Goose, when he played here, because of who I was and where I was and him being the first guy in and it, me being radio and him, this is what Kim Herring said. Goose was a man of the people. Goose was a man of the people.
I think that's true.
That Goose could fit in any room. Black, white, rich, old, right, left.
You know, I was trying to equate it, Nestor, to someone from my era, and he's probably as close to an Artie Donovan figure
that always was.
We've had
always
in
was,
Baltimore.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't have the malapropisms necessarily like Arthur, but Artie was like that. He'd sit out there at his country club and hold court, and Artie never met a stranger. And
Tony has loved his life being an ex-football player.
Right.
He's loved the last 20 years of being the Goose. The Goose was his character.
Sure.
He built the brand. He did TV for 15 years. When Goose died, Baldinger and Goose were close. You want a full circle story. I'll give you this in the end because this guest is coming on next week. But Baldinger and Goose were close from the beginning. When I met Baldinger in 99. I met Goose in 97. So it was in that period of time. All sort of the same age. They're both a little older than me. But Baldinger texts me, and so did Marvin. And they're like, no one lived more life than Goose.
What a great thing to be able to say about
someone, Baldinger texts
right?
me the first day. He's like, Goose lived life. You know, and that doesn't help his children. It doesn't help any of that. But so my story is this. I Wednesday was the funeral, right? I didn't get to go. I had a commitment with Classic 5 Golf. I was up at Pine Ridge. They have this incredible new video system to play golf with. I Pete Gilbert had it on the news the other night. I'm going to be talking to Tom Pierce about it. So I didn't get to make the funeral. And intellectually, I should have known this, but I didn't really know this. There was a post yesterday morning that got shared by a couple of Tony's teammates about the eulogy. Do you know who did for Tony what you did for my mother? A person that I am incredibly, incredibly closely associated with through my career, pivotal to my career in every way, and completely aside from the Ravens or Goose or Baltimore, Kenny Albert.
Oh.
Kenny Albert became Goose's eulogy guy.
How about that?
Kenny Albert is the reason we're sitting together right now.
Exactly.
Now, that's crazy, right?
Right. That's a full circle.
Kenny did the games with Moose Johnston, and Goose was a sideline reporter in his jacket, remember, for 10 years.
Have you spoken with Kenny?
I have not. Kenny's coming on Tuesday. He'll be on next week after the 4th. And I have never in my life I've spoken to Kenny. Kenny and our friends, we keep in touch. I have never even thought about Kenny knowing Goose. Even though they were on TV, I have never thought of Kenny knowing Goose. He read it. He was...
Wow.
He was the priest at Goose's funeral.
There you go.
So Kenny and I are going to have a hell of a conversation on Tuesday because I don't know anything about their relationship at all.
Well, that'll be great.
And he probably knows of my relationship with Goose to some degree. I think Goose might have died not knowing that Kenny and I started our career together. I'm going to ask Kenny that because I've never spoken to Goose about Kenny.
No, people will not want to miss that episode. So we've got all that going on with the Ravens. And then in the midst of this, the Supreme Court changes life for millions and millions of women in our country with the stroke of a pen.
Appalling.
And strikes down 50 years of law.
Well, this is a takedown of big money and government and getting those three judges put in and screwing Obama and the Democrats at the end of Obama's term. Merrick Garland probably should be on the Supreme Court, right? Instead, he's going to wind up being the one prosecuting Trump. Because prosecuting Trump has to happen.
I think this is the story, and I've written about it, shameless self-promotion. If folks aren't following, go to donmohler.com and go to the front porch. I wrote an extensive article called They Told Us What Would Happen. This has been in the works really since Roe. It began in the early 1970s when the Federalist Society, which is a right-leaning legal association with branches really all over the nation.
It's not right-leaning, it's more right-wing.
Right-wing association. Right-wing. And their goal has been for 50 years to pack the court with conservative jurists. My argument in the article that I wrote, it was one of my frustrations at the time with so many, was that Donald Trump telegraphed this. Donald Trump said when he was running for president, I will only put people on the court who will overturn Roe v. Wade. For whatever reason, people in our instant gratification society couldn't hear that, couldn't process that, couldn't make a connection to what that means in terms of appointing Supreme Court justices. And they came up with things like, well, I'm not that crazy about Hillary. I don't like the Clinton. I think I'll vote for Trump. At least he'll shake things up. And you want to say, this is at a time when an overwhelming number of the people in the nation wanted Roe upheld, and they weren't even paying close enough attention to say, well, you know, if we vote for this madman, it's going to be overturned. So
there's been nothing more catastrophic in this country than November 8th, 2016.
It continues.
Because everything after that happened because of Pennsylvania and Ohio and Wisconsin.
Well, we're talking about, right, and it continues, right? to be this curse on a nation. We just found out recently, this past week, that the president told the Secret Service to take down the magnetometers at the January 6th rally and let people come in with their AK-47s and all their weapons because they're not here to hurt me. And then he wants to lead them down. And there's no doubt, I think, in anyone's mind, Nestor, when we talk about that little current event, that the president had every intention of leading them up the steps to the Capitol in as if this sort of Shakespearean figure who was going to reclaim the government. You're right. There's nothing. I don't think it is hyperbole. I'm always worried.
I just can't believe 18 months later, after sitting and watching it,
nothing's been done about it yet.
And the question that we sit here and say, is he going to prison for this? You know, as we sit here right now, is he really going to prison for this?
Yeah, I don't know. He's very clever at not putting his direct fingerprints on things. I tell you where I have gone round go. And I'm no longer even toying with this. For a while, I could hear people when they would say, you know, I'm not sure that prosecuting an ex-president is good for the nation. I'm not sure. I'm way past that. I'm to the point now where that if you think in a prosecutorial way that you have enough evidence that the President of the United States broke the law, then you have every bit of an obligation. To charge
not
him.
Not a right, an obligation.
An obligation. To say to future presidents, you just can't do this. Now, I think it is possible, and it doesn't help the women whose lives are forever going to be changed by this. It is horrific. It doesn't help. I don't know if you've spoken to any
of your... Is there anything worse than a lying judge?
Well, they all lied.
Right. I mean, you can't...
Yeah, they all lied. But
judges
again,
aren't allowed to lie. Right. That's part of being a judge. That's where integrity... That's where honor and integrity and honesty sit for any judge. You can't be a judge and lie. It's like being a cop and lying. You can't do it.
They all lied.
It's incongruent. You're not allowed to lie.
They all lied. And again, I don't know if you've had an opportunity to talk with any of your gay friends over the past week to 10 days.
They're next.
They're terrified. And my heart aches for them. And they're terrified is not something that they're overreacting.
Everybody that's 50 years old lived it.
They know they're next. They know they're next on the list. And to the point where many of my gay friends are truly looking at opportunities to live abroad. That breaks my heart. But before we wrap up the recon this week with all this gloom and doom stuff and death and the country under attack, let's talk about something that actually is good taking place before our eyes. And it looks like finally the plan, the Oriole plan, is actually coming together. And, you know, Nestor, you and I have talked about this regarding the Ravens. I think it's true for every sports team. And here's why I think the Orioles plan is finally coming together. You know that I'm a big believer. I don't know if I call it. I should give it a name, right? Mowers Need a Star program or something. I'm a believer that if your franchise in any sport is truly going to be among the elite, you need several stars. And what I mean by that is players that are as good as anyone at their position. Well, for the first time in a long time here, I think we have three. I mean, you can weigh in on this. I think Austin Hayes, Ryan Mountcastle, and Adley Rutschman are stars. Now, I know it's early in Rutschman's career. I'm so convinced that kid's the real deal. There's nothing in his swing that I don't like. I like everything about his swing, his attitude. I think we have three stars.
Well, you would have said that about Mullins last year, right?
I never did, believe it or not. And my grandson would tell you that. And I like Cedric Mullins because he's on my next tier. I think along with three stars,
I think
you need three really good major league ball players. Yeah. And I think Mancini, Mullins, and Santander are really good major league ball players. So now I have three stars, and I have three really good major league ball players.
That's why they're playing 400 ball now instead of 300 ball, and they're good pitching.
They actually played 500 ball over the last 40 games, or a couple games more than 500. A lights-out back end of the bullpen, which I think you can't survive without anymore in the modern game. The piece that's missing, and we don't know yet, it will either be the piece that keeps them from getting very good, versus just being a team that's exciting to watch, and that is they still have starting pitching issues. I mean, somehow we're almost to July.
Well, if they had 15 starts out of Means right now,
yes,
they, you know, Rodriguez would be six starts
be
in right now.
Correct.
Right? So, you know, that would make them better in August and September than they're going to be. So whatever their record is at the end, I'll tack on 5 wins just on the Means card and saying, you know, that was just a very unfortunate thing because he had emerged.
Well, here's the other piece. Here's the other piece why I believe the future is brighter. And this hasn't gotten written about a lot. It's gotten written about a little bit. Next year, when they go away, when they go to this balanced schedule, when we play everybody in all of baseball, and we go from playing the American League East from 20 times a year to 14 times a year, we're 10 games better when the season opens next year because we're not playing the 4 best teams in baseball 20 times. So this year, I think when we talked back in spring training, I think I said, I didn't know if they'd lose 100 again. I thought they might, but I thought that next year they would be a 500 ball club. I think right now 500 would be too low of an expectation next year. I think next year we would expect them to compete for a wild card. I'll go so crazy as to say that if somehow they get lightning in a bottle with starting pitching over the last 81 games, they may at least sniff a wild card. When I say sniff, be within 5 or 6 games of a wild card as the season winds down. I would caution people, particularly during this little winning streak. Now, they hit a bump recently in Seattle. We'll see how this plays out in Minnesota coming up. But I always caution people, one of the truest adages, Nestor, in all of sports, right, is you're never as bad as you look when you're losing. You're never as good as look when you're winning. So as good as we looked when we were winning these 1-0, 2-1 games, we weren't that
good. Well, they're not going to get that kind of pitching
year. We're not that good. And we also aren't a team that should lose 8 out of 10.
But you beat the Cubs in Chicago next week, so do that.
We shouldn't lose 8 out of 10.
I want to go see Ohtani anymore. Play next weekend. That's going to be my thing.
I think I told you before, the other thing that fascinates me, and, you know, our attendance hasn't been great. I've been out to 5 or 6 games, and the attendance has not been great. But even with that, we're still like 23rd. There are 7 or 8 teams drawing worse than us. Major League Baseball has an issue.
Have you read the Rob Manfred piece on ESPN?
No.
Don Van Noda. One of the great writers in America, Don Van Noda, wrote a huge Rob Manfred piece. So you should go take a look at it.
No, they've got issues. This is the recon. We're at State Fair. Crab cakes, State Fair. Outstanding intern Chloe Ennis keeping Nestor straight. I've never seen the man more organized. It's like
all of it brought to you by
manna from heaven. Give him an intern.
Lottery, our friends at Goodwill, and the bucket hat of our friends at Window Nation, where you buy 2, you get 2 free. Big appreciation, everybody out here at State Fair. We had a great list of guests today. We've had a live recon. I'm at Costas next week, 4th of July. Hope everybody has a great 4th of July Heritage Fair weekend for me.
You know, it's Christmas Day in the Ville, baby, the 4th of July.
Where's your chair when you put it in front?
It's all up and down the road. No. We're at the corner of Montrose and Frederick, man. We've been there 60 years.
Red, white, and blue.
My wife wanted me to 10 years ago, go across the street. I said, we can't go across the street. She said, why not? I said, because this is where we go.
Tradition. He is Don Moeller, my one-time high school guidance counselor and one-time Baltimore County executive, and now just riding shotgun here on the recon. We are WNSD AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore, celebrating the red, the white, the blue, and the crab cakes here at State Fair. Big appreciation out on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Stay with us.